Viewpoint on Mormonism, the program that examines the teachings of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints from a biblical perspective. Viewpoint on Mormonism is sponsored by Mormonism Research Ministry. Since 1979, Mormonism Research Ministry has been dedicated to equipping the body of Christ with answers regarding the Christian faith in a manner that expresses gentleness and respect. And now, your host for today's Viewpoint on Mormonism.
What if the first vision was really nothing more than an invention made by Joseph Smith? Welcome to this edition of Viewpoint on Mormonism. I'm your host, Bill McKeever, founder and director of Mormonism Research Ministry, and with me is my colleague, Eric Johnson from MRM. Naturally, we know if you ever talk to a Mormon that they would place a lot of emphasis on the first vision when Joseph Smith claimed to have been visited by both the Father and Jesus Christ.
And that's because their leaders have stressed this so much, Bill. Gordon Hinckley, the 15th president, said this: "Every claim that we make concerning divine authority, every truth that we offer concerning the validity of this work, all finds its roots in the first vision of the boy prophet."
Whenever you hear the Mormon story being told, either in a Mormon book or by a Mormon general authority, when they're recapping the beginning of Mormonism, the first vision is always right there, prominently displayed as one of the most important events. In fact, they've even talked about that as being one of the most important events in history, in the history of the world. But there's some interesting aspects to this that need to be examined. For instance, Mormon historian James B. Allen actually admits that the first vision narrative, as it's understood by modern LDS members, is suspiciously absent for much of Mormonism's early history. Now, why would that be? You would think if this is really the most important event in the world's history, one of the most important events, that it would be right there, easily to be examined and easily to be understood and, of course, easily to be believed. But yet that doesn't seem to be the case.
Well, it's the bedrock, Bill, of this religion. It's the cornerstone. In the Pearl of Great Price student manual, Religion 327, it says at the bottom, it says it's the most important event in the history of the world. It's something that if it's that important, then I think that it's going to be mentioned early on as well as it should be mentioned today.
If it really happened. Now, here's what's interesting is James B. Allen, he actually wrote about this, and he says, according to Joseph Smith, he told the story of the vision immediately after it happened in the early spring of 1820. As a result, he said, he received immediate criticism in the community. Allen says there is little, if any, evidence, however, that by the early 1830s, Joseph Smith was telling the story in public. At least if he was telling it, no one seemed to consider it important enough to have recorded it at the time. And no one was criticizing him for it. Not even in his own history did Joseph Smith mention being criticized in this period for telling the story of the first vision. The interest, rather, was in the Book of Mormon and the various angelic visitations connected with its origin. Now, Allen goes on to say that none of the available contemporary writings about Joseph Smith in the 1830s, none of the publications of the church in that decade, and no contemporary journal or correspondence yet discovered mentions the story of the first vision is convincing evidence that at best it received only limited circulation in those early days. Now, if the first vision story was actually being circulated, you would think that Smith's critics would have found this to be something to go after. But yet, Allen says that the earliest anti-Mormon literature, and I hate that term, but anyway, that's his term, the earliest anti-Mormon literature attacked the Book of Mormon and the character of Joseph Smith, but never mentioned the first vision. No. And you would think for sure that if that happened, that, of course, would have been a target for many of the Christian pastors, churches, Christians around there to go after, because, of course, we have a problem with that first vision where Joseph Smith says that he claimed to have been visited by God the Father and Jesus. But why is it nobody seems to go after it? It's because it's not being told. Nobody knows about this story in the early years of Mormonism. But if you were to bring that up to most Latter-day Saints, and you know we have, Eric, they would say that's absurd, because they are told at the very beginning that there had to be this first vision. It all goes back to 1820, 10 years before the Mormon Church was even founded. So it becomes a paramount importance if they're going to understand the Mormon narrative. You've got to go back to this first vision. But yet, why is it? And there were critics of Joseph Smith in those early years. You would have Alexander Campbell, you would have E.D. Howe, you'd have Ezra Booth, John Corll, J.B. Turner. None of these guys criticized the first vision.
Somebody should have, if you have a whole bunch. If you only had one or two critics, I could see maybe they just missed it, but not as many as he had.
Well, even Allen admits that not until 1843. Now, the church was founded in 1830. So this is 13 years after the church is founded.
And 23 years after the 1820
exactly.
account, if it's true.
23 years after. The New York Spectator printed a reporter's account of an interview with Joseph Smith. That was the first time that we hear some criticism or even a reference to this first vision. So he goes on, Allen goes on to say that it wasn't until 1842 that a detailed account of the first vision was printed in a Mormon publication. And that was in the Times and Seasons. It actually began printing in 1839. The Times and Seasons began publication in 1839, but the story of the first vision was not told in it until 1842. So again, many years after the fact, that's when this story starts to pop up. Now, we do see in his diary, though, in his 1832 diary, Joseph Smith does give some kind of an account of a vision that he had, but it was only with the Lord. It wasn't with God the Father or Jesus.
This is what his 1832 diary says, Bill. It says, while in the attitude of calling upon the Lord in the 16th year of my age.
16th, we need to point that out.
Yep, a pillar of, and he crossed out fire, and he put light above the brightness of the sun at noonday, come down from above and rested upon me, and I was filled with the Spirit of God, and the Lord opened the heavens upon me, and I saw the Lord, and he spake unto me, saying, Joseph, my son, thy sins are forgiven thee.
So in other words, the whole intent is a little bit different. What he hears is different. The personage who shows up, of course, is changed. Well, not, I shouldn't say changed, because the Lord, we would assume this is speaking of Jesus. And of course, he does include Jesus in the official account. But no mention of God the Father. Isn't that telling? It's like this story is being embellished as the years go on. Now, being embellished, but to whom? Because nobody seems to know about this story. In fact, I think that's why there are so many different accounts of this first vision by various Mormon leaders over the years.
Now, in the court of law, they don't look too kindly on changing of stories as time goes on. I think that's something that we need to point out, that if you're going to trust somebody, their story should be all the same. I mean, the story of the resurrection of Jesus, according to 1 Corinthians chapter 15, remained the same. I mean, from a very early creed and all these different people who said the same thing. It wasn't something that evolved over time.
Well, very quickly, let's take the rest of our time here to talk about some of the differences in the story by other contemporaries in the early Mormon church. You have, for instance, Brigham Young. Brigham Young actually says, this is Discourses of Brigham Young, page 108. The Lord did not come with the armies of heaven in power and great glory, nor send his messengers panoplied with aught else than the truth of heaven to communicate to the meek, the lowly, the youth of humble origins, the sincere inquirer after the knowledge of God, but he did send his angel to this same obscure person, Joseph Smith, who afterwards became a prophet.
And Third President John Taylor says a very similar thing. He says, how did this state of things called Mormonism originate? We read that an angel came down and revealed himself to Joseph Smith and manifested unto him in vision the true position of the world in a religious point of view.
Now, that would pinpoint it back to the official account, because the official account states that Joseph Smith went to inquire about God about mm-hmm. which church was true based on what happened in that alleged revival that they say took place in 1820, which, of course, we know that revival he describes really took place in 1824 and not 1820 at all. It was that same James or John Taylor that said none of them was right, okay, speaking as to what he was told, just as it was when the prophet Joseph asked the angels which of the sects was right that he might join it. The answer was that none of them are right. So dealing again with those angels that he talked about earlier, Wilford Woodruff, The fourth president also said, "The Lord heard Joseph Smith's prayer and sent his angel to him."
Right.
Again, we don't hear God the Father being mentioned. And, I mean, this is years after the fact. So if it's not being told as part of the early Mormon history, you can understand why some of these men might have a different understanding. It wasn't being repeated over and over again like we hear Mormons repeating it today, such leaders as, you know, Pastor Gordon Hinckley and such like that. The story now is etched permanently in the mind of every Latter-day Saint. They all pretty much know exactly what happened in that first vision. But back then, that doesn't seem to be the case. So what do we do with this? What does a Latter-day Saint do with this? Hopefully, they will see that we have a problem right at the very beginning of Mormon history. If they can't seem to get this first vision accurately told, then that tells us that maybe it didn't happen the way Mormons believe it today. I think that's important. I think a Latter-day Saint needs to go back and look into this, because if it didn't happen the way the church is telling them, and then the church is not being honest with them. That's the crux of the matter. The Mormon church has wasted a lot of ink to tell this story the way it appears in their official version, the 1838 account, they call it. They've wasted a lot of ink telling this story over and over and over again. But yet, if it didn't happen, then that, what does that say about the whole Mormon story?
Gordon Hinckley said in 1961, Bill, either Joseph talked with the Father and the Son, or he did not. If he did not, we are engaged in blasphemy. I think that's something a lot of Mormons who might be hearing us right now are thinking, oh, they're not telling the truth. They don't know what they're talking about. We're asking you, look this up, check it out, and if it's not true, Gordon Hinckley says you're engaged in blasphemy.
And why would he use the word blasphemy? That's pretty strong. Because we would not believe that God the Father appeared to Joseph Smith. At least he would not have been alive to tell about it later on. And if it isn't a great blasphemy, Latter-day Saint, I hope you would understand why Christians have such a sense of urgency to tell you about this. Because if you are engaged in a great blasphemy, you need to know about this. You need to check it out. You need to listen carefully to what your non-Mormon friends are trying to talk to you. Hopefully, you will consider this information and make the proper decision regarding it.
Thank you for listening. If you would like more information regarding Mormonism Research Ministry, we encourage you to visit our website at www.mrm.org, where you can request our free newsletter, Mormonism Researched. We hope you will join us again as we look at another viewpoint on Mormonism. Have you ever wanted to go to the Holy Land? It's the place where Jesus walked, a place of great significance in our Bibles. In late February of 2013, Mormonism Research Ministry and Utah Lighthouse Ministry are hosting an 11-day trip to Israel. Among other places, we will experience baptism in the Jordan River, walk through Hezekiah's Tunnel, explore Masada, and float in the Dead Sea. During our trip, we plan to spend a day with Israeli resident Joel Kramer, a former Utah pastor and current film producer, who will take us to Cave 1 in Qumran and Jericho as well. In addition, a 7-day pre-extension tour to Turkey is available. Your price includes all transportation, admission fees, meals and taxes, and tips. If you've never been to the Holy Land, or even if you have, join Bill McKeever, Sandra Tanner, and several local Utah pastors for the trip of a lifetime. It all begins February 19th, 2013. Visit theapologeticstudybibletour.com for more information or call 602-788-8864.